little bit more specific programmatic facts about our institution.
Thank you very much, Justin. So,
formatting seems a little janky, but there we go.
All right. Perfect. Good morning. Thank you all for coming. I've been introduced to three of the students, but we haven't met.
I'm Teja.
Which program are you here for?
Computer science.
Have you already received your visa?
Yes.
You have. So we have three who have received your visas already, and you are waiting. You're at the beginning of the process, and hopefully you'll have enough time. So again, it's a pleasure being here, and again, thank you for the opportunity to present. As Justin mentioned, I wear a couple of hats at least at the university. I am the university executive vice president with primary responsibility over research and economic development and scholarship. And I'm also the dean of the College of Engineering, Business and Education. I come from the faculty. I'm a distinguished professor of engineering and computer science, and my research area is robotics. I'm a roboticist by training. I had my degrees from University of Pennsylvania at the graduate level, from the robotics lab in computer engineering and robotics, and my undergraduate degree was actually from Egypt. So I was exactly in the same boat that you are in, but 5 years ago, actually 30-something years ago. UB is a very distinctive university in many ways. Several unique aspects to what we do, and I think this session will hopefully get you to understand a little bit more about the place where you'll be spending at least the next couple of years of your life, and maybe even more if you progress to studying other degrees or other engagements of any other sort. So UB was formed in 1927. That makes us 92 years old. The university has traditionally been known since its inception to be a university that caters to the professions, a professional university. What that means is that we have, for the last 90 plus years actually, placed more emphasis on our professional programs, and specifically these would be engineering and computing. Our School of Engineering has been formed in the late 40s, early 50s, so it's a pretty old institution. Same with the School of Business, same with the School of Education, and also with our health sciences majors and the graduate programming. The university is home to approximately 14 units. We call them schools or institutes, and recently these units have been coalesced into three large colleges. The first college, which is the one that I'm responsible for, is again the College of Engineering, Business and Education, consisting of the School of Engineering, School of Business and the School of Education, which is home to comprehensive programs at both the undergraduate level, the master's level and the PhD level in various areas, and we'll go through that in details later in the presentation. The reason that these three colleges are bundled together within this entity is that these are colleges with very obvious professional outcomes. Our engineers come to us, they do amazingly well, and our computer scientists, they do co-ops, internships, they work with projects with industry, they do very significant funded sponsored research for several agencies and companies, and they get amazing jobs. Our placement percentage in the School of Engineering in all our majors, both at the undergraduate and the graduate level, is 100%. That's something that we are very, very significantly proud of. The College of Business, same outlook, College of Business at the undergraduate level has so many different types of degrees that you would expect, international business, finance, accounting, working on a new degree in analytics, and marketing and management, and business administration, and many other disciplines at the undergraduate level. At the graduate level, of course, we have the MBA program with several concentrations, including international business, which is what you're currently interested in, and other concentrations in finance and accounting and marketing and others. We also have standalone degrees at the master's level, namely the MS in finance and the MS in business intelligence and data analytics. The School of Education is a traditional teacher preparation school. I've lived myself in the state of Connecticut since 1995, actually. I've been at UB for 24 years now. I used to teach before that, after I graduated from Penn at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, and then I moved back east. And I have four children, ranging from 27 years old to 15 years old, and they have been in the school system in Connecticut, you know, when you add up all of these years, probably 50. So each one of these 50 school years, my kids have had at least 2 to 3 teachers every year who were graduates from the University of Richwood School of Education. It is actually the largest school of education in the state. Not only does it do teacher preparation, but also advanced programming, 6-year programming, and doctoral degrees to prepare principals and superintendents of school district. Actually, the U.S. Teacher of the Year 2.5 years ago was a graduate of our program at UB, and that person, Representative Jehena, actually 2 years later ran for the U.S. House of Representatives, and she is a congresswoman actually now. And she actually was the speaker at our commencement 1 month ago. Very, very, very significant tradition. The School of Engineering is actually home to the largest graduate program in the state of Connecticut. Not only the largest graduate program in the state of Connecticut, but we are also the second largest graduate program in New England. New England is the northmost 6 states in the U.S., New Hampshire, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, and Rhode Island. And the only school, engineering school, within these 6 states that's larger than us at the graduate level is the MIT. And that's not a bad place to be second to in the professional engineering. A school of business, distinguished school, significantly large graduate program that is approximately 60 to 65% at any given point of time. International students, in addition to very significant online presence as of recent. And recently, because of the coalescing of these 3 colleges into this one schools into this one college entity, we're seeing lots of interdisciplinary work going on between engineering and business within the areas of technology management, data sciences, business intelligence, analytics, and several other areas, including things like forensic accounting and such. And the purpose of actually having these 3 colleges again merged to be one entity is to encourage and basically support such interdisciplinary programming between the schools. As I always never got tired of saying, we're preparing you for jobs that don't even exist. We actually don't know what kind of job titles you will be having in the future. Who would have thought in engineering that there will be a job title called autonomous car engineer, for example, 10 years ago, right? That job didn't even exist. Who would have thought that there would be a job called social media marketer, for example, or a digital forensics expert, or, you know, or a nanotechnologist? So again, same 10 years from now, we don't know what kind of job titles you will be holding, and we don't even know what these jobs will be like. So the interdisciplinary programming, which is really encouraged by having these 3 schools belong to one college, actually facilitates that. It gives you a broad background in several disciplines and prepares you for lifelong learning. A significant percentage of what you will be taught in the next 2 years at UB is probably going to be obsolete 5 years after you graduate. I mean, that's the reality of education in the 21st century. I always give the example, when I did my own PhD in robotics in 1991, actually, that particular thesis was pretty cool. That thesis was about having robots supervise each other and talk to each other autonomously. That particular thesis in 1991, which was a very well-known thesis in the U.S. of robotics, that thesis now is probably a project for an undergraduate sophomore. Right, so that's how the pace of change is going up. So again, before I continue, we have 2 new colleagues who just came in. Could you introduce yourself and what major?
Hi, I'm Lee Chuma.
Yeah.
From Bangalore.
And what major are you interested in?
Master of Science in Computer Science.
Computer Science. Did you already get your visa and everything?
Done.
So ready. concern.
He's actually one of the students.
You're ours, okay. So good. Okay, he's ours. He's already. You've been there for a year, right? You were admitted in fall 18.
Pramod and I actually met in June of last year, not in this very same room, but in a similar room just downstairs.
Yeah. So this is basically a brief synopsis of who we are in the College of Engineering, Business and Education. It's also worth mentioning what the two other colleges are, because believe it or not, you as computer scientists, and in your case as a business major, you might actually be doing work outside of your college. So one of the colleges that we have, the other one, is our College of Health Sciences. Our College of Health Sciences is that. It includes many different schools and institutes, serving every year in our clinics more than 20,000 patients within the area of dentistry, within the area of physician assistants, nursing, laboratory science, technology, and many other health sciences, including a doctoral program, etc. And many of our computer science and other engineering majors actually do work with the College of Health Sciences in the area of biomedical engineering, in the area of bioinformatics. As a matter of fact, there are several research projects going on as we speak right now between the School of Engineering and the Health Sciences Division.
It's also a simulation too.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Justin just pointed out, we actually started a new program in medical simulation. So we have these two one, soon to be two, robotic patient, and that robotic patient, you know, is full of sensors, and you know, our healthcare professionals work with that particular simulator and robot in order before they actually touch actual patients, and it's a brand new field. And we're training not only our own UB students on this, but also people from the outside. And it's a great collaboration between the departments of mechanical engineering, computer science, computer engineering, and our School of Nursing and the Health Sciences Division. In many areas too, we have a clinical research director in the Health Sciences Division, and several of the projects resulting from the work within that college require business plans. And our business students and their faculty members work with the faculty members and the students at the College of Health Sciences to develop these business plans. I'm going to talk about interdisciplinarity a lot, because that's something that's really a trademark of the University of Bridgeport. But just to give you a brief idea, several years ago, one of our colleges in the health sciences called the College of Chiropractic. I'm not sure whether you know what the discipline is. Chiropractic is basically manipulating the spine to relieve pains, you know, in the body. And it's an amazing growing profession. Our College of Chiropractic, several years ago, was working on a project. And the project was, it was about 10 years ago. That was during the economic crisis in 2008. And, you know, as in any economy, when the financial times are bad, people tend to file lots of lawsuits against each other. So our chiropractic doctors, in general in the U.S., were getting sued by patients a lot, because when they do the manipulation of the spine, patients claim that the doctor has hurt them while doing the manipulation, which actually does happen, you know, in some cases. So we tried to think of a way to actually verify these claims. So we came up with a very cool idea, and it's really a nice demonstration of interdisciplinarity. So we came up with a glove, right, that the very thin glove that the actual chiropractic wears, which has load cells, force feedback sensors. And basically the chiropractor would be doing the manipulation, and that glove would wirelessly transmit the pressures and forces being applied to a computer, and that computer would actually store it and analyze it and send it to the database of the insurance company of that chiropractor. And that, when you take a look at this project, it's a very applied project, but the amount of work that was done, mechanical engineers and electrical engineers work on that glove and the material and the force sensors. Computer science and computer engineering students worked on the programming and the wireless transmission and the analysis of the data. The mathematics people worked on the statistical modeling and what is now called data sciences. And the business people actually worked a business plan that enabled us to file a patent and actually go and have a startup, you know, resulting from this project. So that's very reminiscent of the kind of work that we do that is so interdisciplinary in nature at the university. One of the other projects that's very exciting that has happened in the area of defense. So in the area of defense, we we were recipients of a very significant grant, actually $3 million grant several years ago, to develop hybrid projectiles. These are the unmanned air vehicles or the drones that you see right now. But these particular hybrid projectiles were incredibly fast ones that would be shot at speeds of top 250 miles per hour. And we wanted people on the ground to be able to actually move them and see what they are seeing and guide them from something like an iWatch. And when you take a look at the kind of work being done in that project, this was actually a very significant project, including several defense subcontractors in the state of Connecticut, few universities. Some universities were working on the aerodynamics aspects. We were working on the material aspect and the energy generation for that hybrid projectile and the transmission and the computer vision algorithms. That project employed no less than 50 people from computer science, from computer engineering, from mechanical engineering, from the mathematics department at the undergraduate level, at the graduate level, master's level, PhD, and also faculty members. So that's the kind of thing we're very proud of. And as I continue in this presentation, I'll touch upon the different laboratories and the concentrations we have that are available to people in all the majors, you know, and that's something to do. Going back to UB, UB is gorgeous, as you can see from the picture. We are actually a seaside campus. That's incredibly rare. All of the eastern U.S. has three campuses that are seaside campuses. One of them is Endicott College, the other one is Eckerd College, and these are liberal arts institutes, and the third is UB. In addition to the campus itself being, seriously gorgeous, very important aspect to emphasize are these factoids. We are a small university. We are medium size, I would say. We are about 5,000 at any given point in time, fluctuating between 5,000 to 6,000 students. So we are not incredibly large like the big state public universities. And as you probably all know, in the U.S., the differentiation between public and private universities has absolutely nothing to do with the dynamics. Public universities in the states are just cheaper for residents of the states, and that's it. But again, the interesting thing about UB, yes, we are medium size, we are private, but we are comprehensive. We actually have been labeled this year, 2019, as a research doctoral university. The U.S. is a humongous place. There are 3,500 institutions of higher learning in the U.S. Out of these 3,500 institutions, and you can Google this, the Carnegie Foundation classifies these institutions based on their profiles. So the classification is typically based on the disciplines and also on the highest degree they offer. Out of these 3,500 institutions, there are approximately 250 to 300 institutions that are research doctoral universities, meaning the highest degree is the doctoral degree that they offer, about 600 or 700 that are master's level universities, and the rest are bachelor's universities, associate, degree type universities, and smaller discipline, it's a single discipline or a couple of discipline universities. We used to be in the master's category for the longest time as a university, the highest category in the master's degree. This year, we actually did break the ranks and became a research doctoral university. In the state of Connecticut, in particular, there are three schools that are RDUs and have a school of engineering that are doctoral, and these are, of course, the public University of Connecticut, Yale University, the amazing Ivy League school, and the University of Bridgeport. There are other four schools of engineering in the state of Connecticut, but they are master's level school of engineering. They are not doctoral. One of them actually is only at the bachelor's level. Why does this matter to you? Because you're going to study for your master's degree, at least initially. It matters because of the facilities that are available. At a doctoral level school of engineering, at doctoral level universities, the laboratories and the facilities are typically very, very significant. As a matter of fact, which of course provides for greater experiences and a diversity of programming possibilities, whether you are an undergraduate or whether you're a master's degree student. So that is something that I always encourage students to do. If you have an opportunity to get admission into a research doctoral university, what we call an RDU, and the School of Engineering, you know, for example, that is interdisciplinary and is a doctoral School of Engineering, I would encourage you to do that, because simply you'll be exposed to world-class facilities and laboratories and research experiences, and even more importantly, possibilities for funding while you're doing the program, because there are research assistantships and graduate assistantships, teaching assistantships, work study position to work in the labs that are available for our students, and I'm going to touch upon that later. Again, we are comprehensive within the three colleges, and the third college that I haven't mentioned is our Arts and Sciences College. The Arts and Sciences College is a traditional Arts and Sciences college that is home to a great selection of undergraduate program, predominantly undergraduate, the classical majors, the sciences, the humanities, English, biology and such, and also is home to a select few graduate programs, the MS in biology, the master's degree in counseling, and three degrees within the area, general area of international engagement, including one degree that Justin here has graduated from. What are the three degrees, Justin?
So within that particular sector of the university, the School of Public and International Affairs, those three are Global Development and Peace, of which I have graduated, Global Media and Communication, and then the third is Criminal Justice and Human Security.
Right. And that would be the third school. Again, very significant work done between engineering and business and the School of Arts and Sciences in areas that you might not expect. For example, you will know through this conversation that I am very biased toward robotics and the robotics lab, simply because that's my background, and we actually have an amazing world-class, you know, top 10 robotics laboratory in the university, the RISC lab. But an example of that collaboration was in the area of designing what we call the robotic musicians. So actually, we worked with the music department in the School of Arts and Sciences, we meaning the electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and the computer science program, to basically design a band of musicians, many, many different instruments. And this band of musicians was basically completely robotic, humanoid robotics. And the cool thing about it is that this particular band of musicians had more degrees of freedom than a regular musician, right? Mm-hmm. So when you play the piano, you have 10 fingers, right? I mean, that's what it is. But when you have 20, what can you do with them? Or 30, for example. And the same with playing on other instruments. That band actually toured the US for a period of 2 years, and now actually it's on display in the Discovery Museum, which is one of the largest museums in the state of Connecticut, in the city of Bridgeport, on the second floor. So one of the mandatory tours that we'll ask you to do when you join the university. Actually, it's a pretty cool museum, and it's a science-based museum. So you'll go there and you'll see that display on the second floor. And you'll see many of these projects going forward. Again, we are and have been traditionally very well known for our international engagement. As a matter of fact, I think the very first agreement international that the University of Bridgeport has done actually was with the government of India in 1945, if I'm not mistaken.
48.
And that particular agreement between the University of Bridgeport and the government of India was to provide scholarships for I think the families of soldiers in army in India. So we have been always known to be an international university. We have been consistently ranked for the last several years, and I'm thinking maybe 10 to 15 years, in the U.S. News and World Report as one of the top international doctoral universities in the country. I think in some years that rank was actually 2 or 3, and I think maybe even 1 in 1 year. Mm-hmm. But we always rank among the top 10 or 15. So we've had this tradition of international students for a very, very significant time, which is important because we are very experienced in helping out and working with our international students before, while, and after they go to the University of Bridgeport, helping them throughout their programming, their travel signatures, helping them with co-ops and internships, employment after the fact, and so on and so forth. So roughly, at any given point in time, our undergraduate student population will probably be anywhere between maybe 5 to 15% international students. Our graduate student population at any given point in time will be between 20 to 25, maybe in some years a little bit more, international students of all the disciplines. Our students come from 80 countries, so you will have a wonderful diversity of students and colleagues and friends to work with in the classes, in your projects at the master's level, in your master thesis, in your master's project, and even class projects. And I always tell my students, particularly in the School of Business, that the experience you get in class projects and capstone projects and business plan development, etc., and also the engineers, by working in a group that consists of five students or six from five different countries or in some cases continents also, by itself is an education on top of the actual work that you're doing in the project itself. It will be a very, very enjoyable experience, and I have no doubt. Again, harping on the interdisciplinary theme of the discussion, our university, again, is very engaged in research. We got sponsored research, and we got funding from many, many different agencies in the U.S. for various projects within engineering, business, health sciences, including agencies like the National Science Foundation, including agencies like NASA, National Institutes of Health, the Department of Energy for doing work on sustainable development and green engineering and such, Department of Education for doing work on establishing STEM schools and STEM programs, etc. As a matter of fact, one of the grants that we got, we actually built a STEM high school in the city of Bridgeport, a magnet school, which is a great feeder, and we do a lot of work in them. We actually have a STEM bus, a huge city bus that we converted into a mobile lab. And that bus has 3D printers, robotic devices, satellite control equipment, and many venues. And our graduate students, in particularly computer science and business and computer engineering, tour with that bus in the state of Connecticut, stopping at not-for-profits and high schools and elementary schools, actually, and so on, one day at a time, you know, doing experiments and showing, you know, students and teachers, the advances in technology as of recent. As a matter of fact, the University of Bridgeport has been the recipient of the most NASA grants in the last several years. So every year, our students and faculty, and particularly graduate students and undergraduates, receive on the average 3 to 6 grants every year to work on projects. One of our coolest projects as of recent was the robotic monkey project. So we basically sent a robotic monkey to space. And also, if you recall, a couple of years back during the solar eclipse, remember when there was this big news in August about finally everything lining up, we actually sent a hot air balloon with significant sensing equipment as part of a NASA grant to the stratosphere to monitor the event during that time. Lots of things to talk about in terms of cool projects. Our faculty to student ratio is 1 to 17. Our faculty are the ones who teach the classes, and our faculty are world-renowned researchers and scholars in their area, whether they are in engineering, computer science, school of business, or health sciences division. And this is, you would expect that, but actually that's not very common, believe it or not, in doctoral universities in the U.S. In big doctoral universities, typically the ones who teach the faculty who teach the introductory classes are not the full-time tenure-track research faculty. Actually, they are the graduate students, and only the advanced classes are the ones taught by the faculty. UB is not like that at all. We want to preserve our teaching mission, and we ask our faculty to teach all the classes, beginning from the freshman year all the year up. Which I think is really, again, a distinctive characteristic that we are very proud of. Our classes are small-sized. In the School of Business, I think the cap is either 25 or 30, depending on the discipline. In the School of Engineering and laboratory-based classes, the cap is 15. And in the regular lecture-type classes in the School of Engineering, including the computer science department, the cap is 25. So you will always be in a small setting. The faculty will know you by name. They will call upon you. You are never going to be able to escape to the back of the room and not get engaged with the class, so that's the downside of this. But you will have really unfettered access to a faculty member. Faculty members hold 3 to 4 hours of office hours every week. many of them would accept walk-in people, talking with them, and so on and so forth. They will be the ones working with you on research projects in the classes that you'll be taking and supervising you directly. They will know you by name, and if you don't show up, they will actually ask you, why didn't you come a couple of days ago? So I think in many ways, this really provides for a wonderful experience. Again, when you talk about RDUs, you know, being a school that is one of, you know, again, 300 RDUs in the, or 250 or so RDUs in the US, and being a school of engineering that's probably one out of 100 programs in the country that offers a PhD in engineering, is truly a unique experience. Our interdisciplinary leanings will provide you for a great base and a background that will enable you to basically function in the new economy that will be interdisciplinary in nature. And really the personal touch and being and having access to this world-renowned researcher is something that you will significantly benefit from. The small size classes and the very small size labs will enable you to really get engaged and develop world-class projects. We are obviously fully accredited by all the relevant agencies, both at the university level, ABA for engineering, ABCSB in business, and for all the other disciplines that have been, of course, for a long time. Again, you know, in addition to the location and the gorgeous seaside park that we that really is the edge of the campus, we are truly very well located. We are an hour north of New York City. The bus station is 5 to 7 minutes walk. I mean, the train station is 5 to 7 minutes walking from any place on campus. You get on the train, 1 hour later, 1 hour, 15 minutes later, you're in Manhattan. You're in downtown New York City. You're in Grand Central. That's a pretty cool thing. Not only because of the fact that you will have access to New York. In the case of Boston, Boston is a couple of hours north of Bridgeport. No, the good thing about that is not only the convenience of being in these really great cities, but also it provides you with access to endless co-op and internship possibilities that I'm expecting all of you to actually experience during your stay at UB. Many of our students have co-ops and internships, not only in Bridgeport or Fairfield County, the surrounding area around Bridgeport, but in New York and Boston and uptown. As my colleague here, Justin, always says, the state of Connecticut is actually a small state. It's 2.5 million people, something like that. But it's a very mighty state from an industrial point of view. It really is. Hartford, which is an hour north of Bridgeport, is the second capital for the insurance industry in the world, after London. Lots of insurance companies. Some of you might wonder what does have insurance to do with business or, you know, or engineering? Everything. Insurance companies are hiring data scientists. They are hiring people who are very well versed in business intelligence and data analytics all the time. Lots of work in coding, and many, many of our students get their full-time positions and co-op and internships with one of these world-class insurance company, of which the highest concentration density, second highest concentration density, is in Hartford. Same, of course, with our business professionals. We are a manufacturing state. Lots and lots of companies, both within the defense industry and outside of the defense industry, do lots of work in advanced manufacturing, including, again, companies like Pitney Bowes, companies, you know, within the UTC system, Sikorsky Aircraft, Electric Boat, and many other amazing companies that hire our engineers, both mechanical, electrical, computer science, computer engineering, and as of recent, business intelligence and data analytics specialists within the School of Business. Biotechnology, pharmaceutical industry, great concentrations of companies ranging from PerkinElmer to Protein Sciences to several many others within the state of Connecticut. And again, they do hire our engineers. They do hire our bioengineers and computer scientists and coders and our business professionals. Stanford, I don't know whether it's the second, third, or fourth largest concentration of investment banking and or...
So it's the third highest density of Fortune 500 companies in the United States. But I don't know the particular rank for financial services. But
yeah,
is the industry of Stanford?
Financial services is what the city of Stanford is actually known for. Within that area around Stanford, extending all the way to New York, I cannot tell you how many hedge fund companies are actually quite headquartered, how many investment banking services and the financial services company are located. And a lot of our students get jobs, again, within the School of Business and the School of Engineering within these venues. So between the financial services industry, between the biotechnology slash pharmaceutical companies, the defense and advanced manufacturing industry, and the insurance industry, you could not have chosen literally a better diversity of truly eminent companies to be in.
Just to share a couple of economic fast facts, I do a lot of work with the U.S. Department of Commerce, and the U.S. Department of Commerce is closely associated with the Department of Trade. And you know, fun fact is, in Westport, Connecticut, about 15 minutes away from us, is the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates.
Yep.
Through the combined efforts of groups like Stanley Black & Decker, Sikorsky Helicopters, Electric Boat, many that Dr. Soap had mentioned, the industrial capacity of the state of Connecticut outstrips the entire country of Australia.
Yep.
Per capita income is ranked number 11 in the world. The size of the state economy is number 11 in the world, and per capita income would outstrip that of Switzerland at about $85,000 per year.
I think probably we're second to places like maybe Dubai and Qatar, or the United Arab Qatar, and maybe one or two more countries. It's truly a great place to be a professional. It's a great place to major in things like computer science, engineering, and or business, especially given the orientation of the school and the interdisciplinarity of our programming. Again, these are more factoids. This is where we are. New England, we are the third highest concentration, as was mentioned, of Fortune 500 companies. Being, again, you know, that close to Boston, New York, even to DC, and having, you know, the transportation facility being literally more or less like 5 minutes from the campus, it's transformational, really, and it's really very, very helpful. Whether you're interested in IT, banking, biological sciences, engineering, advertising, design, being a graduate of UB and being within that location will facilitate amazing opportunities for co-op and internship. We emphasize very much the fact that we are one of very few universities that provide for specifically our master's level students opportunities for co-ops and internships. Typically, co-ops or internships are reserved for undergraduate students because they stay 4 years, so there are at least 3 summers in which they can do them. And at the master's level programs are typically short, I mean, typically 2 years, right? So very few universities have the kind of relationships and the industry advisory boards and engagements that we do have that actually encourages and allows and is incredibly successful in having our master's science students, after they spend the first year, go for a co-op internship. In your case, this is called curricular practical training, right? The U.S. allows students from international students to go for a co-op internship and a full-time position in the summer, up to 40 hours a week, after having spent 2 semesters in the university. So, of course, having 70, 80% or sometimes more, depending on the discipline of our students at the master's level, are able to do these co-ops and internships, and they do it all the time, is wonderful, simply because of 3 reasons. Number one, they get invaluable experience that helps them in their career. Second, financially, it's wonderful, right? Because, you know, if you work 3 months, 40 hours a week in one of these great companies on a co-op or internship, the amount of funding that you receive in compensation is probably more than enough to cover your tuition for the following year. And third, which is even more important, working for these companies usually end up, if you do a good job, in a permanent job offer upon graduation. As a matter of fact, I always tell my colleagues, my problem as a dean is not to get jobs for my students who are graduating. My biggest problem is to make sure that they stay and finish the program because they get job offers before they graduate. So in many ways, that's really the great advantage of doing a co-op internship. So that's something that I encourage you to actually do. These are some of the companies. Again, these are the percentage of our domestic international students in the university, a little bit more percentage at the graduate level, as would be expected. Again, we have students from 80 countries. Of course, the two countries that are, I think, the most represented, as with, you know, any other university in the U.S., is India and China. I mean, these are the highest, but we have students from everywhere, the Middle East, Latin America, Europe, Eastern Europe, other places in Asia, and so on and so forth. It's truly a great experience for all those involved. So that would be at the in terms of international admissions. Again, these are the numbers represented on campus. Schools of engineering at the U.S. at the graduate level are predominantly international. So when you take a look at the statistics, again, as I mentioned, there are approximately 250 to 300 or so schools of engineering, 100 of them are doctoral. When you take a look at the number of bachelor's degrees offered in the U.S. from all of these schools combined in all the engineering disciplines, including computer science, that number is about $75,000 to $80,000 bachelor's degrees every year. When you take a look at that, and these are mostly domestic students, right? Mm-hmm. At the graduate level, that number is about 10,000 master's degrees in all the disciplines offered every year from all of these, 150 or so schools of engineering that offer a master's degree. And out of that, close to half, if not a little bit more, are actually international students. At the PhD level, the number ranges between 4,000 to 5,000 PhDs in all of the disciplines, again, including computer science, and 80% to 90% of these are international students. So when you add all of these numbers combined, the number is less than 100,000, right, every year. If you take a look at the Labor Department and the websites, the actual national need for engineers and computer scientists, job openings every year, is 280,000. So even with, you know, all of these numbers and the influx of international students coming in and staying in the U.S., we're not even close to satisfying half of the requirements of what the workforce needs are. So for those of you who live here, of course, and anywhere else in the world, actually, you've been hearing the wonderful political rhetoric, you know, about, you know, H-1 visas and everybody is not welcome in the U.S. and all that nonsense. There is absolutely nothing further from the truth, right? This is basically the political rhetoric that has nothing to do with the reality. Nothing has changed. Companies are hiring the international students. They are giving them the H-1 visas. They are giving them the green card. They want them to come for co-ops and internships before they graduate, simply because they can't survive otherwise. I mean, the economy is in desperate need of engineers and computer scientists and business professionals in areas that are quantitative. So the political rhetoric is that the U.S. is a country, is a great country in which there are systems and balances and checks in place. Doesn't matter what people say or what you're hearing or what the media inflates significantly, and they do that here in the U.S. and everywhere. The reality on the ground from an economic point of view is that nothing has changed. The need is getting more and more because the economy is actually doing better, right, in the last 100 years. So we need even more people to get into the system. So that's not an issue. As a matter of fact, there is no better time to be one of the professional majors and a STEM major and an engineer who's graduating from the U.S. right now. Again, I mean, the numbers don't lie. Every one of my students gets a great job, period, and very high paying job. Again, I think Justin and my colleagues here will talk about this in details later. The international orientation is kind of nice because we have amazing events on campus, cultural orientation. We have international coffee hours, international cultural clubs. You know, the Indian Student Association, which actually I think won the award for the best cultural association in UB at least twice in a row, if I'm not mistaken. Other associations that based on cultures, and one of the events that I personally like and enjoy very much is our International Student Festival. We have a week, I think, in March, April. And that week is our International Week. Lots of events and talks and cooking sessions and cool things, culminating in that particular event, which is magnificent. You know, all of the students from different countries come and they cook and they dance and they sing. And they host, you know, different events for everybody in the community, not only UB students and faculty, but the whole community. It's an amazing event that you'll enjoy very much. In addition, of course, to the cultural clubs, what I'd like to emphasize is that the university is part of many amazing professional organizations, and our students are parts of these organizations. National Society of Professional Engineers, the Student Society of Women Engineers, the Entrepreneurship Club, the Innovation Club, IEEE, it's the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineering, ACM, the Association of Computing Machinery Chapter, BMS, the Biomedical Engineering Society, and many other societies, the American Society for Engineering Education. We have chapters of every one of these on campus available for our undergraduate and graduate students to join. And as a matter of fact, not only do belonging to these professional organizations is helpful from an events and attending events and becoming aware point of view, but also they provide amazing mentoring services. They provide wonderful workshops and events and conferences that you'll be attending and going to and learning from senior colleagues, you know, in the region and the country. And also, more importantly, they provide scholarships. So the ASCE, IEEE, Society of Women Engineers, the American Association for University Women, and many other venues provide scholarships for our students. The top winner of the American Association of Women Engineers, one of two awards in the country a couple of years back, was one of our students, $20,000 scholarship, a truly eminent award. The Honor Society, Phi Kappa Phi, Epsilon Pi Epsilon, Sigma Xi, and Tau Beta Pi, all of these honor societies within the different disciplines. Sigma Xi is the scientific research discipline, Phi Kappa Phi is the academic achievement discipline, Epsilon Pi Epsilon is the discipline in the computing sciences, Delta Mu Delta is the business honor society. All of these societies offer scholarships, and our students have consistently won scholarships competing for these awards every year, ranging from $1,000, $2,000, all the way to $20,000, and more in some cases.
They almost spam you, as a matter of fact. I'm a Phi Kappa Phi member, and maybe every other week there's a call for proposals.
And actually, I do encourage you to not consider that a spam, but to actually join these organizations, be active, join, apply for the proposals, and attend the meetings. As a matter of fact, we have been so engaged with some of these organizations, not only that we are winning amazing awards and our students are winning the most. I'll give you a couple of examples. So the American Society for Engineering Education as an example, and you can go to the sites, ASCE.org. The ASCE divides the country into six geographical segments. We are in the Northeast segment. When you take a look at the American Society for Engineering Education, each of these segments, zones, we call them in the US, holds an annual conference, right? So there are six engineering education conferences every year. Excuse me. We have always held these conferences. For example, at the ASCE Northeast region, which is an eminent region. I mean, this is a region that has the University of Massachusetts, Boston University, Northeastern University, the MIT, University of Bridgeport, UConn, and so on and so forth. I think there is 90 out of the 280 schools of engineering in our region. We always compete, and we actually hosted the Zone Conference at UB in 2009 and 2014. And 2020, next April, when you come and join UB, it will be hosted in UB again, so the American Society Zone Conference. And I'm just letting you know, you're going to all be drafted as volunteers to work in the conference and attend the sessions and so on and so forth, and also, of course, to compete. And these conferences for the last 10 years, and again, go to the website and check, you will see that the University of Bridgeport has won top awards, first, second, or third, and in some years, all three. And this is in the research graduate student project category, which is a very competitive category with many amazing, wonderful schools of engineering in the country. And we have outperformed everyone. So that's a wonderful thing to aspire to. So not only you will be belonging to these organizations, attending the workshops, getting mentored and learning, and hopefully competing for scholarships, but even more so, you will be attending their annual conferences. You will be participating as presenters for your papers and research projects and competing in the different categories. The IEEE, Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, is hosting the 2020 conference in engineering and computing ethics at UB, which is a conference every 2 years. That's an international conference, so that's a pretty cool thing too. Lots of cool things. Again, I'm going to talk about the program highlights, but I just want to mention one thing which is probably crucial. UB, again, is one of very few universities that offer the opportunities for co-ops and internships after you've been there for the first 9 months for master's level students, but also, which is something I'm personally very proud of, it is one of very few engineering schools in the country, and particularly RDUs, that actually offer graduate assistantships, teaching assistantships, and research assistantships, and work-study positions for our master's degree students. So as you all know, when you were admitted, you were probably awarded a merit scholarship based on your grades, depending on what grades you had. I think that ranges between 3,000 to 6,000. And again, that's, of course, a wonderful thing, and I'm sure most of you qualify for that, because our admission standards in engineering in particular are pretty high, so most people who would be admitted would be probably eligible for such. But in addition to that opportunity, and in addition to the opportunity for you know, getting significant compensation from a co-op or internship after the first 9 months. During your stay for 2 years, you have the opportunity to become a research assistant, working with a faculty member on a project. You have the opportunity to be a teaching assistant, again, teaching a lab, working on grading as such with a faculty member, and more so becoming also a work study student, working in the lab and such. These opportunities will happen to you after you come to campus and after you do well in your first semester and your grades, after you get to know your professors and the classes. You will be competing for these opportunities. And in any given semester for several years, we have offered more than 100 such opportunities for our master's level students in the various departments to our students, and the majority of which are international. So you come, you do well, you study well, you perform well in the class, you have the opportunity to actually get significant part of your tuition, if not all, completely waived, let alone the compensation from the work-study positions. Work-study positions pay, I think, $11 to $16 per hour, and you can work up to 20 hours per week. These opportunities are primarily available in our engineering labs, our research labs, our general computing labs, but also in other parts of the university. Student affairs, international office, international affairs, registrar, and many, many other locations. So the opportunities to actually have meaningful employment while you study, part-time employment, doing something very relevant to your major, either as a research assistant, teaching assistant, graduate assistant, or work study students, is abundant. All you have to do is work. You come, you work, you get to know your professors, you do well in your classes, the sky is the limit. Literally, the sky is the limit. After the first 9 months, you have opportunities to work for a top-notch world-class company for a 3 month period. You do well, you have the opportunity of getting a great job offer upon graduation, again, in a great company. So utilize these experiences. These are unique to our university for master's level students. Many of what I'm describing is typically not available at all, except for PhD students, because they stay long, right? They stay 4 or 5 years. So the fact that we make them available to our master's degree students is something you should utilize, and I have every confidence that you will do so. These are our programs. Again, as I mentioned, our programs are very interdisciplinary, but let me dig deep and try to understand, make sure you understand what I mean by that. So again, at the undergraduate level, we have the typical programs, computer science, computer engineering, computer engineering technology, mechanical and electrical engineering. I'll skip over that because, you know, we're talking here about graduate programs mostly. At the graduate level, we have master's degrees in all of these disciplines. So we have master's degree in computer science, computer engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, biomedical engineering, technology management. And as of the fall, we are going to be offering a new degree at the MS level in artificial intelligence, and it's a very unique degree. Again, I'm going to talk about the concentrations in these areas and so on, but again, at the PhD level, we offer in computer science, computer engineering, and technology management. Many of these programs are actually very, very unique. Our technology management PhD program is one out of 5 technology management PhD programs in the U.S., so that's a very unique thing. Our MS degree in technology management is one out of probably 20 to 25 across the U.S. And again, this is one such interdisciplinary program that exhibits great collaboration and joint curricula and joint research between engineering and business. So in the technology management program, we have concentrations in biotechnology management. We have concentrations in energy management and sustainable development, data sciences and business intelligence, supply chain management, logistics, remanufacture, reuse, recycle, end of life processes, intellectual property management and such, and project management in general. Again, in the computer science engineering, it's a very unique program because actually it's probably the only one within the Northeast that has a focus on both computer science and computer engineering, meaning software and cloud computing and all of mechatronics and so on, and also the hardware side of things, meaning computer organization, architecture, sensing, robotics, VLSI, and so on and so forth. So it's truly a very unique program. I'll talk about the concentrations of these going forward. I just want to mention a little bit more about the artificial intelligence. Our AI MS degree program is actually built on what we have already been offering in our computer science master's degree and computer engineering master's degree. And that artificial intelligence MS degree program will have concentrations in robotics, because that's one of our very, very strong areas. We'll have a concentration in data sciences. We'll have a concentration in computer vision and machine perception, and a concentration in deep learning machine learning. So these would be the four concentrations in our AR. In addition, of course, to the concentrations of the other MS degree programs that I will talk about. Again, the modus operandi is the following. All of these MS degree programs, including the MBA and the MS in Finance and the MS in Business Intelligence Analytics, have a core set of classes. So there are 4 to 5 classes that every one of you will have to take, period. I mean, they are the introductory MS level classes. I think in some programs these are 3 only, not even
yeah.
4.
Yeah.
But so you'll take them in one semester, and another one. And then after you finish the core classes, you will have the liberty of choosing your concentration, right? And again, most of the concentrations we offer are not based on a department or a degree program, right? So you could be in the Department of Computer Science Engineering or the Department of Mechanical Engineering or Electrical Engineering, and you could be taking elective courses and concentrations with fellow students from other departments, right? So a great example, again, and I'm incredibly biased, still, it's robotics. A great example is the area of robotics and automation, right? You can specialize in robotics and automation as a computer scientist, or as a computer engineer, or as a mechanical engineer, or as a biomedical engineer, or an electrical engineer. And the idea is you will be taking classes within that concentration in areas like class and introduction to robotics and automation, advanced robotics, autonomous systems, advanced controls, computer vision, image processing, and artificial intelligence, let's say. So these will be the 6 additional courses on top of the 4, right, that you would take as your core. These 6 you can take as an electrical engineer within the electrical engineering program, or as a computer science program after you finish the core in computer science, or as a computer engineer after you have finished the computer engineering core, and so on and so forth. In my robotics, so most of the concentrations are not based on departments. Most of the concentrations are based on laboratories, right? So we have interdisciplinary laboratories that are joined to all of the degree programs. So for example, the Robotics Intelligence Sensing and Control Lab offers by the faculty in the various departments these 6 courses or 7 courses every year. They also, that lab also offers seminars, that lab also offers research opportunities. Students from mathematics, computer science, computer engineering, biology, biomedical engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, at the undergraduate level, the master's degree level, and the PhD level, and postdoctoral level, and faculty members all work together in the lab, right? So the computer science students will be working on the computer vision and the machine learning and AI algorithms for our autonomous submarines and autonomous vehicles and unmanned air vehicles, and doing the programming and the computer vision algorithms, right? Our computer engineers will be working on the interfacing, right, of the ultrasonic sensors, the infrared sensors, the laser range finders with the manipulator and the moving platforms. Our mechanical engineers will be working on the dynamics, right, and the structure of the manipulator or the mobile platform or the airplane or the submarine, and designing the materials and the actual dynamic design. Our mathematicians will be working on kinematics and inverse dynamics and trajectory generation for all of these robotic manipulators, as an example. Our biomedical engineers will be working on artificial prosthesis and biomechanics within the robotics lab. So that's the cool thing about the structure. Again, the same is reminiscent of our wireless and mobile computing. Our wireless and mobile computing, which is a Cisco-sponsored lab, that particular lab, we have students from computer science, electrical engineering, and computer engineering working in the lab at all the levels. Our nanotechnology laboratories, right? We have mechanical engineers, biology engineers, people from the chemistry department, people from the physics department, and mathematicians working in the nanotechnology lab, and so on and so forth. So again, the idea is, regardless of the MS degree, you'll be taking the core set of classes within the discipline, and then you'll be choosing an interdisciplinary concentration to finish up your electives, and then, of course, doing your final project one-on-one with your professor, one of the professors that you will choose to work with. And that's one of the cool things about our design. Again, as I mentioned, NASA is a great collaborator of us, founder of many, many of our degree programs, research projects. This is our biomedical engineering laboratory. This is Professor Patra, a world-renowned researcher in the area of nanotechnology and carbon nanocubes, originally from India, actually, from Calcutta, if I'm not mistaken. And many of the students who go on, both in computer science, computer engineering, and biomedical engineering, and go on and finish their PhD, several faculty members in various institutions. This gentleman actually is now a postdoctoral fellow at UConn. And this gentleman, Isaac, actually is a postdoctoral fellow at UB. We are in the school. Computer Science Engineering, Professor Lee, who did a lot of work with NASA. Also, one of the most noted professors whom actually I've met yesterday, and he's actually my joint director, my co-director now, of the robotics lab is Dr. Sarosh Patel, who lives in Hyderabad. And actually, Dr. Patel is someone who got degrees from UB in electrical engineering, technology management, and a PhD in computer science engineering. And got so many offers from universities as, you know, faculty member, and we actually decided to keep him. And he became a faculty member, assistant professor now in the School of Engineering. World-renowned scientist in his area of interest, design of manipulators, amazingly cited and published, and very well known within his area. Other things that are worth mentioning, many of our students opt to go for dual degrees. So in many cases, the combination of MBA and technology management is very common, right? So many MBA students, regardless of what the concentration in the MBA, elected to do a technology management master's degree because it has significant value. And we're seeing more and more of that recently, particularly in the area of technology management with a concentration in business intelligence and data analytics, and vice versa. Technology management with an MS degree in business intelligence and data analytics within the School of Business. We're seeing lots of people doing both computer engineering and computer science, or computer engineering and electrical engineering. Very, very common. Biomedical engineering, mechanical engineering is another very common and very something that students go for. Again, of course, if you do the dual degree, the point is, and the advantage is, because some classes can be double counted for both degrees, you do not end up having to take 60 credit hours or 22 or 23 courses. Usually it ranges between 45 to 48 credit hours. So there is significant savings in terms of number of courses if you elect to do a dual degree, and many of the students do this. I do not encourage you to contemplate this at the beginning of your program. Go, do well in your first semester, start getting your TAs and work study positions and lining up your ducks in terms of co-ops and internships. And then as you progress and know the faculty and the labs and the curricula better, then you can sign up for the new program while you're there. It's not a big deal. Again, various specializations, I think I mentioned that. Again, do lots of, again, very interdisciplinary work within our labs and within our electives and so on, in robotics, automation, biometrics, tissue engineering, nanotechnologies, wireless and mobile computing, FPGA and VLSI design, biomechanics, etc. And again, lots of GA positions. We have 25 engineering labs, and we have a TAM on campus. We recently got funding from this agency that you see, Department of Defense, National Science Foundation, NASA, Department of Ed. And again, our students have been winning amazing awards in all competitions, in addition to scholarships. So they've been winning amazing awards with the ASCE, with many other agencies, and the honor societies, and the scientific honor societies, in addition to winning scholarships. These next couple of slides about biomedical engineering, I didn't get what your area of interest is.
Mechanical.
So I don't think there are any biomedical engineers here. So I'm going to skip over the biomedical engineering piece. But again, I mean, this is reminiscent of not necessarily only biomedical engineers, but these are companies that are within our backyard, right? Whether it's Bayer, whether it's Pfizer, whether it's Johnson & Johnson, and many of our students, both, not only within computers, I mean, biomedical engineering, but within our bioinformatics area and computer science and others do end up working for that segment of the industry. This is our computer science engineering concentration and research areas. Several things worth noting. Again, I'm the biased person in robotics. But an area that's actually worth noting is our cloud computing laboratory. Our cloud computing laboratory is one of the best in the country, headed by one of the top-notch world-renowned consultants in cloud computing, Professor Osif Mahmoud, who is actually concurrently now the director actually of the School of Engineering, great friend and colleague. And I do encourage you to talk with him if this is an area for the computer scientists in you that you're interested in pursuing. Lots of exciting work. Our cloud computing lab do lots of joint work with our programs and object recognition, pattern recognition and such, in addition to lots of work on cybersecurity applications. Cybersecurity is an incredibly hot area, as I'm sure all of you know, and many of our students are electing to specialize within the computer science and the computer engineering program on cybersecurity and digital forensics in particular. And we offer concentrations and certificates within this within this area. One of the most noted, mentioned a couple of projects in which our cloud computing facilities and students working in the area, and our students working in object recognition, pattern recognition, and signal processing have done, is a joint project with the city of Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. City of Bridgeport actually is the, from a population point of view, the largest city in the state of Connecticut, urban city. Not as close in size to Bangalore, but for Connecticut, it is the largest state in the city in the state. Do you guys know what a command and control center looks like in the city? It's basically like what you see in the movies. It's like 50 to 100 huge screens, right? And you have the officers sitting and just watching all of these screens with all the cameras in the city, trying to see if there are problems. Of course, these poor officers can't do it, right? Because there are lots of screens and they have to watch it 24/7. It's impossible. They're going to miss things. It's just not humanly doable. So one of the projects that we worked on and we're currently doing with the city, we're providing security for the city via facial detection for their building, like City Hall, by the way. Yeah. But on top of that, in the command and control centers, we're writing lots of software and algorithms, artificial intelligence type algorithms, image recognition, segmentation, and such, that actually works on the video streams coming from all of these cameras in real time. That's what the algorithms do. So for event detection, so if you have cars running and you know the license plates from the database of the police of stolen cars, because that's data that's available. If the cameras see a car and it captures, you know, in real time the license plate of the car in a stolen car, it will actually cause an alarm and will dispatch officers to that car immediately. If you see people congregating and running, you know, uncharacteristically in an area in the city, it means there might be a problem. So it will dispatch officer to the congregation area, right? If you have your database of criminals, right, and basically, you know, convicted, you know, people who are not in jail or whatever, or people you know have, whatever, problem people, we do facial detection. And if one of these people pop up, you know, dispatch will happen to the area in which that particular person had appeared. Even weather events, significant storm in an area across the street, traffic jams, et cetera, et cetera. So we're doing all of this autonomous software that works in background, right, in the background, to basically replace the humans, right, that are sitting in front of these, you know, hundreds of screens to help the city. So that's lots of work. All of this work is done on the cloud. Our computer science, computer engineering students are helping the city do all of this work, and it's really amazing. It's an amazing experience too, because you're doing this incredible, you know, futuristic job in the city, working in the, you know, in Bridgeport while you're doing the degree program. So it's kind of cool. Wireless and mobile computing, robotics, parallel computing is a big area, image processing, control systems, lots of work in automation manufacturing. We are actually home to the largest 3D printer and an advanced manufacturing lab, but particularly the 3D printer, which is roughly 30% maybe of the size of this table, and you can print things like city blocks in 3D. It's an amazing, I'll show it to you later, I hope. Again, biomedical engineering, you have the research areas, I'm not gonna go over them in details, although one of them is worth mentioning because lots of our computer engineers, computer science work in bio, micro, electromechanical systems, or myoelectromechanical systems in general, drug delivery and EMS, nano-electromechanical systems. One of our faculty members, Professor Jean Cudi, actually, was one of the very first individuals to create a pill that can be ingested that actually has cameras. And that pill that is ingested that has the cameras, it would actually, okay, let me back up. So the way to identify problems in the body via imaging is typical, right? CAT scans, MRIs, and X-rays, right? And of course, in this time and age of particular, AI and image processing and segmentation algorithms and deep learning are actually providing better diagnostics than the most experienced doctor, right? As a matter of fact, radiology as a discipline, non-invasive radiology, is probably going to disappear. My son is a doctor, he's a physician, so we always have these discussions all the time, and I'm telling him that, you know, we want to make sure that you specialize in an area that is not going to disappear. This area will disappear. Why? Because basically, I mean, good doctors are good doctors because of experience, right? I mean, they've seen so many cases, they have read so many CAT scans, MRIs, and x-rays, that when they see something new, they're able to diagnose, right? Because they've seen it all. Of course, when you have a system that's an AI-based system with an amazing image processing and object recognition algorithm that has been fed data, not only from an experience of 1,000 or 5,000 patients, but 50 million patients and the appropriate diagnosis, it will never go wrong. It will give the right diagnosis. So what this gentleman did, Professor Jean-Hugh Lee, is that, however, there are ailments and diseases and certain types of tumors that are not actually recognizable from an MRI, CAT scan, or an X-ray. A good example is intestinal cancer, like tumors inside the small and large intestine. They are simply not visible. They are small, they are not as typical tumors in other parts of the body, they are not recognizable. They have to be seen from the inside. So this gentleman devised a pill, and the pill has cameras, right, working as a small battery. You ingest it, and while the pill is traveling in your small and or larger intestine, it's shooting a continuous stream of video and transmitting it to be stored, right? And by the time it goes out, you already have an image of the path. And what he devised was algorithm to see problem areas inside the intestine while it's traveling. This has actually been licensed in Korea already, and it's under FDA approval, as far as I know, as of recently heard in the US. Amazing project. Yes, it lies within the area of biomedical engineering, but of course, everything that I've said is computer science, right? I mean, the algorithms and the processing, and so on. One of our faculty members in electrical engineering, Professor Shang, who has a couple of PhDs, actually, one from Hong Kong and one from the US University of Cincinnati, specializes, again, in microelectromechanical system, delayed drug delivery mechanisms, and nanoelectromechanical systems. Lots of the work that he does, of course, is clean room work because you have to, you know, devise these things, has to do with algorithms for recognizing and analyzing sense data from these very minute devices. Again, this is electrical engineering. I don't think there are any electrical engineers in the room. One area worth mentioning for the non-electrical engineers is the PLC. We have an amazing PLC and controls lab. Very, very successful concentration in engineering. Lots of our computer science and engineers do specialize in PLC controls. Lots of programming involved, and they end up doing great work in this area. Again, technology management, one of my favorite, obviously. Technology management, again, is a very common degree that many of our both business students and computer science students in particular and mechanical engineers elect to dual major in. Despite the fact that they have studied or started in the other discipline, because again of the flexibility of the offerings and how cutting edge the offerings are and how they are in line with industry. Again, ranging from service management, manufacturing engineering, strategic sourcing, innovation, program and project management, supply chain, intellectual property management, and such. Four faculty members in that program, world-renowned. Professor Conger is the chair of that program. She is a world-renowned expert in recycled, reused, and remanufacture, amazingly cited and published, and she works one-on-one with students within this area. Amazing publication record, very similar to the computer science department. Professor Chris Buck, a biotechnology expert and a biotech management expert. Professor Nasir Sheikh, who's an expert in many quantitative and data and applied analytics areas, and Professor Gatzelin, who is a project management expert. Again, this is an area in which analytics, modeling, and simulation is paramount, and that's why they do lots of joint work within the area. My lab has collaborated with this particular department in a robotic application for green engineering. So we did significant algorithms for autonomous disassembly of end-of-life products, right? So you have a bunch of robots, you know, and these robots are seeing, you know, the machine that has been to be destroyed, and based on recognition algorithms, you tear it apart and you recycle, reuse, or manufacture these end-of-life products autonomously without human involvement, using minimal efficient movements so you can do maximum volume. Very, very cool stuff. Again, mechanical engineering, these are the areas that are common. Again, I am biased. So robotics and rapid prototyping, in particular 3D manufacturing and additive manufacturing, are some of the most common areas. In addition, of course, to finite element analysis, biomechanics, and such. Again, automatic control is a very significant area of interest. This, the kind of work that we do with NASA and space engineering and aerodynamics, is also very significant. You need to take a couple of pictures also, sure, if you don't mind, like you did before. So again, mechanical engineering is one of these areas in which we are seeing very significant growth. I did mention the work that was done with NASA, right? Within the area of the robotic balloon, within the work that we do with the Discovery Museum, weather forecasting. We actually are building a satellite station on campus. It's going to be in the ABC building very shortly. And most of this work actually is initiated by the Mechanical Engineering Department, Professor Paulus, great researcher in the area, and Professor Joyce Hu, who's actually a very well-known area within the area of fluid dynamics and fluid mechanics. Lots of work in manufacturing, 3D printing, computer-aided design. We have, of course, every cool gizmo you can ever imagine, whether it's 3D scanners. We do reverse engineering of machine parts. Justin is laughing because I promised him when I get back, I'm going to give him a mini-me. I have this 3D scan of myself that is so accurate, it's actually kind of scary. My wife didn't want it at home, actually. But we do lots of work in 3D, particularly 3D printing, and also in sensing, reverse engineering and inspection of machine parts. And the work that we do in inspection of machine parts is crucial for industry, and particularly for the U.S. Army. So that's part of what we do within the area. Yeah, these will be the engineering research centers and laboratories, right? And again, the idea is think of these laboratories as the go-to place for your electives in your master's degree program, right? So you could specialize in 3D printing and advanced manufacturing, meaning you'll take courses in additive manufacturing, you'll take courses in control, you will take courses in reverse engineering and inspection, you will take probably courses in rapid prototyping, regardless of what degree you're in. Your final project will probably be in this area, right? You'll be working with group projects and working with a company from our industry advisory board that would belong to this area. Same applies for our wireless and mobile computing. I mentioned our green engineering renewable energy laboratory. Of course, we have people in mechanical engineering doing lots of work in the area of green engineering and renewable energy, electrical engineering, and technology management. Our nanomaterials and nanobiomaterials lab, including our NANS and microelectromechanical systems, nanoelectromechanical systems, my favorite. the RISC lab, obviously, our milling facility, our cloud computing cluster, which is jointly administered, and that's a sample of our, again, elective interdisciplinary research areas, coursework, and stuff. I think this is probably too much details now about our significant labs, and of course, again, I'm biased. These are actually real equipment. These are not toys. These little robots actually are rescue robots. So in the case of fires and in the case of hazards, people, passing out, and the stuff in the case of problems, they would actually go and they would pull these individuals autonomously. So these little things have actually everything. They have infrared sensors, they have laser range finders, they have serial cameras and ultrasonic sensors to enable them to navigate autonomously and capture elements from the outside. Some of these are autonomous, some of them are teleautonomous. This is my submarine, the University of Bridgeport submarine. It's a one-man submarine, and the idea here is that we're going to make this submarine do lots of mapping in the Long Island Sound, the area of the ocean that you've seen, and we're going to make it autonomous. To be tethered, but autonomous, it will go under and it will do autonomously the mapping of the bottom of the seafloor. One person can actually go in it, inside it, and actually drive it manually, which is something that I'm truly aspiring for. Again, my wife is not allowing me to do it for now, but I'll do it one day. I am a diver, but of course, if a problem happens, being a diver is not going to help you. You're going to die. But that's one of the reasons we're making it actually autonomous. This is our 3D, again, this is a panorama of all of our facilities, our robotic manipulators, our inspection machine, our milling machine, a few 3D printers, our mobile platform that moves maps and so on, a bunch of other things. But it's worth noting that this particular device is the largest 3D printer. It has one printing head, as you can see now, right? So you can do things in parallel, but I'm working on a project with the company, with 3DP, so we can have two more, so we'll be able to do printing. It's actually very dope. It will make the process much faster. This is the opening of the advanced manufacturing 3D printing lab, and now we're working on the acquisition of metal deposition printers to complement our facility, which is something that I'm personally very excited about. So not only you will have a copy of me and resin, but in metal too, so the golden Oscar thing. Sorry, I couldn't resist. This is our industry advisory board. We have three industry advisory boards at the University of Bridgeport. One of them is for the School of Engineering, and these are some of the companies represented. So our industry advisory board is a bunch of industry executives, typically C-level executives, CEOs, CTOs, CEOs of major companies that work with us. So these individuals help us in so many different ways, right? They provide resources for the companies, for company visits. They provide donations to the School of Engineering. They provide scholarships for the students. They provide co-ops and internships for you guys, right? You know, every year. And also they employ our students. These are a close collab, and also they provide us with projects, actual research projects that they need in industry for you guys to do in the classes and also for your master project and thesis. Very distinctive, great group of individuals. We hold meetings 3 to 4 times a year. I always invite 5 to 10 students to these meetings to actually present our students to them. We have a great board for our School of Business, the Industry Advisory Council for the School of Business, a truly eminent board for the School of Engineering, and a great board for our up-and-coming Innovation Center, which you should be very excited about. Our Innovation Center on Bower Hall is a $3 million building that we have just renovated completely. And actually, my new office will be in that building. I'll direct that center for a year. And that building will include makerspaces. It includes our Student Entrepreneur Center, which already has a digital business. We will move part of our incubator. We have an incubator on campus, home to several startups. Some of these companies will be in the incubator. We have an intellectual property lawyer that we hired from a State of Connecticut grant, who's actually going to help file patents for our students and faculty who come up with exciting projects. And we also have spaces for mentoring and seed funders to come and fund some of these projects. It's going to be a truly innovation space that will be home to many startups and many innovation activities that are jointly administered by engineering business and all parts of the universities towards the creation of significant intellectual property that really have greater impact for society. So that would be something that these boards will also be very involved in terms of projects. These are again some of the collaborators that we have. Connecticut Academy of Science and Engineering is a great partner of ours. Some of our faculty are actually members of the Academy. We also have 2 members of the African Academy of Sciences. We also are on the board and have served, and many of our faculty on the Discovery Museum and on the Inter-District Science Magnet School that we actually built jointly with the City of Bridgeport. We are members of Connecticut Innovations and CTAC, who actually helped us establish the first high-tech business incubator on campus and the Innovation Center. SW Society of Women Engineers, some of the national labs that we work with include Brookhaven Center for Advanced Technology, established a chair in robotics in our school that I've had the honor to be the first founder thereof. Connecticut Technology Council, National Society of Lead Engineers. FaceChex is a biometrics company residing in the university. Lots of truly very significant work happening with all of these organizations. A couple of things about our alumni, like our soon-to-be alumni in the room here. 3-4 years ago, the university invited one of our engineering graduates to be actually our commencement speaker. And that gentleman, Manish Chaudhary, was my student. Not long ago, actually, maybe less than 15, 16 years ago. So he was in your shoes 16 years ago. Young kid, I mean, he's probably your age, when we invited him. I'm sorry. So Manish actually graduated, and his first project was in his dorm room, helping students fix their computers at the time when that was a problem and so on. graduated, established. You guys do shopping online, right? I mean, you know, all the time. And at the end, you go to a shopping cart. You click on the shopping cart and you fulfill whatever, eBay, Amazon, whatever. His company is the number one producer of software for shopping carts in the world. So he writes the code for shopping carts and sells them, modules, to all kinds of companies, small companies, big companies. All of his employees are UB graduates from computer science and the School of Business, graduated, established his first business as a startup in his dorm room, then you know, finished his degree and moved to downtown Bridgeport in a small office in a small building, building software, employing you know, a bunch of our students you know, initially. Now he has a great operation downtown Bridgeport, less than a mile from the university. All of his employees are UB employees. An amazing success story, very nice gentleman. Always comes back and talks with our students. I'm sure you see him, he's on the campus all the time. And we decided to invite him a couple of years, our commencement speaker. We always invite politicians, right? We invite a congresswoman, you know, this year, but she was actually an alumni, so that's really an alumni invitation. But other than that and him, we always invite our congressman, the government, that's very typical in commencements. That year, you know, because of that amazing success story, for an immigrant, you know, who came to the U.S., established a great business, helped the university, helped colleagues, helped other students, and also helped enrich the local economy, we thought that was actually very, very good to have, you know, a great story to talk about and to have. One of the companies residing in our incubator right now is actually headed by, Olethi's son, is headed by one of our alumni from the School of Engineering, who used to work for a hedge fund, and he didn't like commuting back and forth from the city every day. So they actually told him, you can establish your office and hire your employees anyway. And that's what he has, and the incubator in Yuli. The company decided that. Again, this is not very important, but I mean, these are some of our research fundings and what we get. But the most important factoid for you in this slide is that the opportunities are abundant in Yuli. Amazing opportunities. You can do well, you can become RAs, you can become GAs, you can do work study positions. You'll be working on world-class cutting-edge projects while you are at the university, working in interdisciplinary labs and such. And I encourage you to get engaged from day one. You will enjoy it, you'll make amazing friends and colleagues, and you will do well. I encourage you also, most importantly, and I know that Justin will emphasize this in his presentation, to start looking and really exploring what I talked about, right? Go to the website, take a look at the projects, the profile of the individual faculty members, what they do, what their papers look like, what the projects that they're doing are about, right? What are the opportunities? What research grants have they received recently? What does their lab look like? What do their graduates look like? Go to my robotics lab, click on the projects. Of course, I'm biased. I mean, go to any lab, right? Click on the projects, click on the students, click on the alumni, you know, for the last 10 years and see what they are working and what they are doing and their personal information. Look at the papers we publish, the research we ask to receive. Look at the videos of these projects, right? And do that throughout and try to prepare yourself mentally before you even go there. To lecture to one or two.
What's the YouTube channel, UB Engineering, that you put together a few years ago?
Do we have internet here? Or?
I do on my machine here.
Okay, let's bring it. Let's bring it.
What did you bring?
Sure.
No, let's do this.
I mean, actually, yeah, just give me the internet, I'll show you. So anyway, till Justin does that, that's what I truly encourage you to do. Do your research, right? Do your research. Just go to me. Forget YouTube. I'll get it. TARUSOH.org. Okay, good.
Yeah, you can see the kind of stuff that I watch on YouTube. Oh, I'm a geek.
Yeah. Okay. So, for example, okay, this is the page for the Risk Lab, right? Okay. So you have a YouTube channel here, right? And you have 92 different videos, right? Launching ceremony, the 3D printed guns. Yeah, you don't wanna do that. This was an interview about, you know, the danger of 3D printed guns. So here you'll find a lot
Thank
of
you
things.
For clarifying.
No, so you'll find lots of stuff from the media about the lab and the projects, right, and so on. But other than that, and other than media interviews and TV programs and so on, you and you don't want to hear me speak. Already I've heard enough today, actually, I think, because some of these are speeches. You will find videos about facial recognition, right? You'll find videos about solar eclipse drone project with NASA. You'll find, you know, you'll find a lot of projects. Oh, we worked on developing microsatellites with the Discovery Museum that we sent to space with very significant functionality. You will see about walking mechanisms for quadro drones. So these are drones that can walk and then jump and do cool things and so on and so forth. You will see examples of undergraduate and graduate research projects. This is a cool project that was published and very, very highly cited. This is optimal energy efficient multi-sensor collision free algorithms for robots to walk and to identify places and to do optimal mapping of areas. So anyway, I mean, you'll find amazing set of things. But even more importantly, of course, the coolest thing is just seeing that, watching the video. I mean, that's the easier thing. But I mean, for example, students, right? If you go to students, alumni, for example, right? That gives you an example of alumni throughout the last year. Of course, we've had hundreds more, but these are the ones we kept in touch with and had amazing outcomes, right? You'll see what they are and what they have been doing and so on and so forth, right? Bishad Gamir, I mean, a great example. He's not from here, he's Nepal, right?
Nepal.
So Bishad example, he's the CEO. I don't know why there are two of them. Yeah, he had a billion.
Double.
Oh, he had billion degrees, that's why, yeah. So anyway, Bishad, no, that's not him, this is Bishad. Bishad had several degrees, as you can see, and now he's the CTO of Standard Oil, which is a main oil company in the state of Connecticut. Yep. This gentleman comes back with his president, the CEO, and they give awards at our Engineering Achievement Honors Award ceremony every year. As a matter of fact, some of these videos will include that ceremony, and he comes and gives awards to the best top two or three students. Anyway, I mean, you'll see, you know, amazing number of the vice president for research at IBM, T.G. Watson, is one of also another of my international students. Let me see. I'm trying to go down and see. Reema Lattas just finished her PhD. Now she's the deputy minister of higher education in Saudi Arabia. As an example, several faculty members here.
You passed over two faculty members that I saw.
Which ones? I'm sure. I mean,
Abdelshakur,
Hussein,
Omar,
Banish is the gentleman that I mentioned right previously. ISAM, PWS, doing a wonderful job over there. And so on. I mean, you'll find a lot of amazing examples of alumni and alumni accomplished and so on. But more importantly, in addition to the videos, and in addition to the so these are examples of publications, right? So you can go here, for example, take a look at the journal publications, and it will tell you, and it will have copies of everything that was published all the way to November 2018, right? So this will give you a great snapshot of the top 100 papers and projects produced by the lab, right? In addition to the videos, so that's not too bad either. What else would be things to explore here? Again, as an example, research, right? Some of the current projects that are happening in the lab, right? And so on and so forth. So again, the point is, I mean, this is just one example, but you really need to spend some time. You need to actually go, you know, to the computer science program. Take a look at the faculty members, take a look at their profiles, what they do, the projects, videos, you know, do your Google searches and so on. And I think this is important. Number one, to prep you for a great career and get sets you ready to, in order to, you know, to do research when you go up. And for the ones of you who do not have the visa, actually, this is a great way to prepare for your visa interview if you haven't done that, right? Because you will know more information about what's going on and your data point will be your own data point, as opposed to canned speeches and such, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm good. I think I extended my welcome here in terms of time. But if you guys have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask, of course. Do you have any questions before moving on, actually? Okay, so I give some of you...
I have a question. Yeah,
before that.
Ask you or Justin?
Yeah, of course. First of all, I have some cards here, right? So I give some of you, the ones who came on time, cards. The ones who did not, I'm going to leave my cards here. And please do take one. And if you have any questions after today, or even after you get the visa, or after you arrive in the U.S. and you'd like to ask me personally, don't hesitate to, of course, email me. Let me answer yours very quickly.
So there are some prerequisites which we need to complete.
Okay, that would be Justin. Okay. I'm talking about. No, you can ask you during, because he's going to talk about that. Do you have any academic questions, at least relating to this presentation? Okay, fine. So I'll give this to you and take it from here. And again, I'll be back at the end if you want to ask me questions.
Thank you, Doctor.
My pleasure.
All right, so moving on from engineering, I've got something a little bit...